Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of AI Unchained. I'm Jack, and as always, I'm joined by the one and only Core. How are you doing today, Core?
Hey Jack, I'm doing great. Feeling hyped for today's episode. We've got a ton to unpack, so if you're into AI, Web 3.0, and all those spicy tech debates, stay tuned. We're going deep.
Absolutely. And speaking of spicy, you know we're talking about everything from the meteoric rise of AI startups to the latest shenanigans in the crypto world. Plus, we've got some juicy details on the latest regulatory battles over advanced tech.
Oh man, the regulatory stuff is going to be epic. And you know I can't wait to dive into that clash between tech giants over AI ethics. It's like a soap opera, but with algorithms and ethics committees.
Uh-huh. That's right, Core. Before we dive into the heavy stuff, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to our listeners. You all are the reason we do this, and we love hearing from you. So don't hesitate to drop us comments, questions, or topics you want us to cover in future episodes.
Definitely. The feedback from you guys has been incredible, and it really drives our discussions. All right, Jack, let's kick things off. What's first on our agenda today?
Well, I thought we might start with the latest AI breakthroughs. There's been some fascinating progress in AI-generated art and music. It's like we're moving towards a world where your favorite band might just be a neural network.
Don't even get me started on that, Jack. Between AI creating symphonies and designing jaw-dropping visuals, I'm starting to wonder if we humans are going to have any creative jobs left. Let's get into the nitty-gritty of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And after that, we've got to talk about the latest in Web 3.0, the decentralized future that's getting everyone either super excited or incredibly skeptical. Where do you stand, Jack?
Oh, you know me. I love the promise, but I'm cautious about the hype. There are real opportunities, but yeah, lots of potential pitfalls too.
Spoken like a true realist. I'm more of a plunge writing kind of guy, but I see where you're coming from. And for our listeners, let us know where you stand on this whole Web 3.0 thing. Are you Team Jack or Team Core?
Perfect. And last but definitely not least, we'll tackle some of the latest political moves that could impact the tech world. From new legislations to international tensions, it's never a dull moment.
Yep, politics and tech are like that messy love affair you can't look away from. So buckle up, folks, because we're diving in.
Awesome. So, let's get started. Stay tuned, because we've got a lot of ground to cover. Let's unchain this conversation. So, Core, let's dive into Intel Corp CEO Lip-Bu Tan and his vow to impose new financial discipline at the chipmaker. I mean, this guy's tasked with turning the ship around, but he's been awfully vague on the details. What's your take on this?
Oh, Jack, it's one of those classic corporate promises without much meat on the bones. Saying you'll be more disciplined financially is like me promising to eat healthier without specifying what I'll do. Cut out carbs, eat more greens, whatever. Intel's been struggling to keep up with the competition, and vague reassurances aren't going to cut it.
Right. And meanwhile, over in Shanghai, China's throwing this massive AI summit. All the big names, star founders, Beijing officials, financiers, they're all converging. The goal? Leapfrogging the US in AI. That's pretty ambitious, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. They're not just aiming to catch up. They want to completely outpace the US. It's like China's saying, hey, we're here to win and we're bringing our A game. And the support they're getting from their government is unparalleled. Compare that to the regulatory challenges and political gridlock we often see stateside.
Which leads us right to the Trump administration's AI action plan. Industry folks are actually praising this blueprint. However, Penny Pritzker, former U.S. Commerce Secretary, is sounding the alarm on how research funding cuts could cripple the U.S. in this tech race.
Yeah, it's a mixed bag, Jack. On one hand, you have this shiny new plan that's getting accolades, but on the other, you're slashing research budgets. It's like building an impressive race car, but then cheaping out on the engine. How do you expect to stay ahead?
And speaking of staying ahead, look at Tesla. They're warning of rough quarters ahead. Quite a roller coaster for Elon Musk over there.
Every quarter with Tesla feels like the next episode in the most unpredictable TV show ever. One minute, they're setting sales records. The next, it's all doom and gloom. With competition heating up and economic uncertainties, it's no surprise they're tempering expectations.
Meanwhile, Google's stepping on the gas, planning to raise their capital expenditure by $10 billion. They're clearly betting big on AI and cloud services.
Smart move, if you ask me. The demand for cloud services and AI isn't slowing down anytime soon. Google's playing the long game here, positioning themselves to dominate this space. They're not just looking at today, they're anticipating the needs of tomorrow.
Now, let's switch gears to something a bit more cloak and dagger. The next time a banker pitches an investment to GIC PTE, their deal might get analyzed by GIC's virtual investment committee and an agentic devil's advocate chatbot.
It's straight out of a sci-fi movie. Imagine pitching your big idea, only to have a chatbot poke holes in it with unnerving precision. GIC is leveraging AI to enhance their decision-making, a move that could set a precedent in the financial sector.
Exactly. And while we're on the topic of AI, these financial tools tie back into the bigger picture of AI's impact on various industries, whether it's making investment decisions or improving cloud services.
Yeah, AI is weaving its way into every facet of business, and it's fascinating to see how different sectors adapt and innovate with these technologies.
And amidst all this innovation, President Trump's administration is getting mixed reviews on its approach to AI and technological competition. Some say it's great for the tech industry. Others, like Pritzker, are worried about the long-term consequences of underfunding research.
It's a fine line to walk, balancing immediate industry support with the foresight to fund the foundational research that'll keep the U.S. competitive in the long run.
It's a dynamic and unpredictable landscape, that's for sure. What do you think, Cor? Are we looking at a future where the U.S. can regain its tech supremacy, or are we poised to play catch-up to China's ambitious AI dream?
Tough call, Jack. With all these moving parts, the policies, the funding, the tech advancements, it's anyone's game. But one thing's for sure, whoever masters AI will lead the next wave of global innovation.
Absolutely. And who thought we'd be here, casually discussing national AI supremacy like it's the latest sports news? But that's the reality now. The age of AI has well and truly begun.
Couldn't agree more. It's an exciting time to be following tech. Never a dull moment.
You know, Cor, Go's concurrency model is always brought up as one of its crowning achievements, but there's a blind spot many seasoned Go developers overlook: the issue of memory safety. It's quite problematic that experienced developers are often unaware they can break memory safety without any explicit unsafe operations.
Absolutely, Jack. It's quite a dangerous blind spot. I mean, Go is designed to make concurrent programming simpler, but this trade-off can lead to some serious issues. Take Rust, for example. All their safety guarantees are explicitly defined and checked at compile time. They're not just hand-wavy promises of safety, they're baked into the language.
Precisely. Rust forces you to face and deal with potential memory safety issues head-on due to their strict borrowing and ownership rules. Go tends to lean more on simplicity, which is great for development speed, but can be a trap for developers who assume they're in a completely safe environment.
It's a classic engineering trade-off: simplicity versus safety. Speaking of which, have you seen the latest discussions about Jacob Young's new Arch64 backend for Zig?
Yeah, I have. It's fascinating how he managed to cut down on the number of passes needed for liveness analysis by generating mirror and reverse and removing the deferred value tracking needed in the x86-64 backend. It's kind of like trimming an overgrown hedge, making the process both cleaner and more efficient.
It's innovation at its finest, really. It's amazing how this backend is passing a significant number of tests despite being so much smaller and potentially faster than the x86 one. This could have substantial implications on how future backends are developed.
And with less logic involved compared to x86, it's simpler, but without sacrificing performance. Speaking of which, did you catch how this plays into the ongoing conversation about AI-generated reports flooding the cybersecurity industry?
Oh, definitely. The irony of using AI to tackle AI-generated slop is almost poetic. It's a double-edged sword for sure. On one hand, AI can significantly speed up bug triaging, and on the other, it can flood systems with false positives that lead to wasted resources.
Exactly. The real challenge is finding the balance. AI's capability to assist in bug hunting is remarkable, but ensuring those reports are valid is a whole different beast.
And don't get me started on the implications for data security. It's scary how large language models can produce seemingly accurate yet completely fabricated bug reports, Just imagine the waste of time and resources for human analysts digging through that junk.
It's a perfect example of how, even with advanced technology, there's still a crucial need for human oversight to interpret and validate AI outputs. Just because it looks good on the surface doesn't mean it's useful.
Right. And this also extends to the latest moves in AI legal tech. Tools like LegalOn are impressive with their attorney-drafted legal content, but still require human validation to be effective. They're like having a supercharged assistant that makes legal processes faster, yet still needs a lawyer's touch.
Speaking of supercharged, what about Alibaba's AI glasses? They seem like they're leaning heavily into making everyday tech truly comprehensive by utilizing AI in real-time translation, music, calls, you name it. It's the embodiment of tech-fueled convenience, but with massive implications for data privacy.
Yeah, the AI capabilities are essentially becoming ubiquitous. But this comes at the cost of having to be vigilant about how our personal data is being used. With everything becoming more interconnected, the privacy concerns are valid.
It's a constant trade-off. What we gain in convenience and efficiency must be balanced with our right to privacy. Tech companies have to navigate this landscape carefully to maintain user trust while pushing the boundaries of innovation.
That's the key, Jack. Balancing power and privacy isn't easy, but it's necessary if we want to keep making progress while protecting fundamental user rights. The AI revolution isn't just a technological one. It's deeply intertwined with ethics and responsibility.
Absolutely. It's on all of us, developers, tech companies, regulators, to keep this balance in check. The future of technology hinges on how well we can uphold this responsibility as we embrace new advancements.
And with that, we're actually seeing some amazing strides being made, like the push for more transparent and ethical AI frameworks. It's all about harnessing the power while safeguarding individual rights and ensuring our digital landscape evolves responsibly.
Spot on. Core innovative yet ethical. We need both hands on the wheel as we steer into the future. And that, I think, is the essence of all these discussions we're having today. So diving back into this memory safety debate, the whole notion of memory safety seems to be getting a lot of attention these days. But honestly, the term is a bit elusive. It's like memory safe, but what does it really mean?
Yeah, people throw it around like it's the magic solution. But at its core, memory safety is about preventing bugs like use, after-free and out-of-bounds memory accesses. You know, those nightmare scenarios where your program does something it wasn't supposed to because it mismanaged memory.
Exactly. Those bugs not only crash your program, but can also open it up to security vulnerabilities. But here's the thing, core. How do we differentiate that from, say, thread safety? Java developers, for example, went to great lengths making sure their programs with data races are still well-defined. Like, you might see quirky behavior, but you won't crash the program.
Yeah, they've got a point. Java's memory model ensures that even if you've got a data race, the program runs predictably. You won't see a crazy seg fault crashing the whole system. So, in a sense, all Java programs are thread safe because they can't cause undefined behavior.
Java and Go do things differently. They handle concurrency and memory safety in a way that guides the behavior of running programs. Basically, Java ensures the program is still well-defined under races, while Go sometimes allows undefined behavior.
But this is where it gets sticky. People talk about safety like it's divided into categories: memory safety, thread safety, type safety. But the real crux is undefined behavior. If your program goes off the rails and does something the language spec says it can't, that's where vulnerabilities breed.
Right. Once your program has undefined behavior, UB, it's kind of game over for security. The whole safe versus unsafe language argument fits right here. If your program's behavior can go undefined, all bets are off. It doesn't matter if it's memory misuse, threading issues, or whatever, it's ripe for exploits.
Yeah, that's the bright line. Either your program stays within the rules of the language or it doesn't. UB is like the Wild West of vulnerabilities. That's why languages like Rust are praised for squeezing out UB. They enforce strict rules to ensure the program can't break its own laws.
So true. It's not just about eliminating memory safety issues, but ensuring the entire software behaves predictably. We can't overstate this enough. Look at C++. Before the C++11 memory model, programs with data races were just unpredictable. Java tackled this way before, letting developers avoid those UB pitfalls.
And let's talk about practical debugging. Ever tried tracking down a memory bug in C with UBSAN? Before Zig integrated a decent UBSAN runtime, you'd get something like Sigil. Super helpful, right? Now, the improved error messages are game changers. They tell you exactly what went wrong and where.
A lifesaver for anyone working with C interop. Zig's improvement means you're looking at signed integer overflow instead of scratching your head over an illegal instruction signal. Debugging becomes less of a mystery hunt and more of a straightforward problem-solving task.
It's a huge leap forward, especially for newcomers who'd be pulling out their hair trying to understand vague error messages. The details matter. Knowing there's a signed integer overflow versus getting smacked with Sigil means clearer, quicker resolutions.
And this is important, not just for experienced developers, but for anyone entering the space. Detailed error messages can turn a steep learning curve into a manageable climb. That's why these developments in memory safety and UB handling are more than just technical improvements. They're shaping the way people code.
And that's why the concept of memory safety, thread safety, and all those distinctions aren't as crucial as eliminating undefined behavior. If we focus on ensuring our programs can't stray into UB territory, we're moving towards safer, more reliable software, no matter the language.
So, Core, let's dive deeper into this whole spectrum of safety when it comes to programming languages. It's pretty clear that not all languages are created equal when it comes to safety, Go being a prime example that's much safer than C, but still has its quirks. What's your take on this?
Absolutely, Jack. I think the key here is understanding where the trade-offs lie. C gives you direct memory access, which is powerful but dangerous. It's like giving someone a loaded bazooka when they only need a fly swatter. You can do a lot of damage if you're not careful. On the other hand, Go provides more safety out of the box with features like garbage collection and race condition detection, but it doesn't come with the deeply ingrained guarantees you might find in something like Rust.
True. Go trades off some low-level control for safety and ease of use. Speaking of trade-offs, this reminds me of the payment processing market. Visa and MasterCard, they essentially run a duopoly, 90% of the market share. How do we even get here?
It's a classic case of first mover advantage combined with network effects. I mean, once they established their networks, adding more banks made them inherently more valuable to merchants and vice versa. It's like a positive feedback loop on steroids, but it raises eyebrows when only two names dominate so thoroughly.
Exactly. It's like once they gain that stronghold, all other competitors need to beat ridiculous odds just to toss their hats in the ring. And then you have disruptors like RuPay in India kind of poking at this duopoly. It's akin to FinTech's David versus the Goliaths.
Ha, let's hope RuPay packs the right slingshot. But seriously, it shows that even the giants aren't immune to competitive pressure. The government backing definitely helps too. It's like playing in a rigged sandbox, but in RuPay's favor this time.
Yeah, but let's not forget that Visa and MasterCard have other fish to fry. Amazon has been pushing for lower transaction fees, and then there's the rise of digital wallets like PayPal and Apple Pay. Could these be the actual game changers?
That's a great point. The digital wallets are fascinating because they layer on top of the existing card networks, yet they offer a sneak peek into a future where traditional payment processors might get circumvented. It's like standing on the shoulders of giants and then trying to leap off.
Without breaking a leg, ideally. Though, let's not ignore the risk of security hiccups. Speaking of which, you mentioned digital wallets. They're still tethered to the banks and hence Visa and MasterCard in many cases. It's like being half free. You think this will change?
That's the big question, right? In China, Alipay and WeChat Pay have shown us it's possible to leap beyond traditional banking systems. Whether a similar shift can happen globally is still up for debate, but it's clear that the landscape is changing.
For sure. Another pivot, related but different, let's talk about regulation. Governments are waking up to the nuances of these financial ecosystems. It's turning into a regulatory chess game. What's your view on their involvement?
The regulators. They're perpetually playing catch up. It's an intricate dance. They try to keep things fair and competitive while not stifling innovation. It's like they're trying to fix the plane while it's taking off. And we'll be the ones strapped into our seats, wondering if it'll stay in the air.
Huh, well put. Looks like the line between technological innovation and regulatory frameworks is as dynamic as the code bases we were discussing earlier. Safety, competition, and innovation, all just different shades on this spectrum.
Absolutely. Whether it's coding languages or payment systems, it's all about finding the right balance. Anyway, this has been a fascinating dive into how intertwined our digital and financial worlds are becoming.
Totally. And as we always say, keeping an eye on these developments is crucial because they impact real-world economics and our daily lives in ways we might not even realize.
Yep, and that's why we've got to keep peeling back the layers. So, where to next, Jack?
All right, that wraps up another riveting discussion on AI Unchained. Today, we dove into some fascinating topics, from the latest breakthroughs in AI to the impact of emerging tech on the global economy and a spirited debate on current political shifts.
Absolutely, Jack. We covered a lot of ground. Our analysis on the ethical implications of AI advancements really hit home, and that back and forth on the future of autonomous vehicles was quite the ride.
Ha! No pun intended, Core. We also can't forget about our deep dive into how AI is transforming industries like healthcare and finance. Those insights will be crucial as listeners navigate this rapidly evolving landscape.
And let's not underestimate the importance of staying informed about political changes that can influence tech regulations. Our listeners should definitely keep an eye on those trends.
Indeed, Core. Now, as we wrap things up, we want to extend a huge thank you to our audience. You guys make all of this worthwhile. Your engagement and enthusiasm drive us to explore these topics deeply and deliver the best content we can.
Yes, thank you all for tuning in. We always appreciate your feedback and love hearing from you. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share your thoughts. We read every comment.
And a special shout out to our sponsors and partners who help make AI Unchained possible. Your support keeps this conversation going strong.
So until next time, keep questioning, stay curious, and remember that the future is what we make of it.
See you next time on AI Unchained.
Bye for now.